Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Winter, spring, summer, fall, seasons change. We still keep it together.
Hey, Beverly Hills 90210 fans. Are you ready to dive deep? Episode by episode. Storyline by storyline, character by character, as we break down the making of your favorite zip code with your host, Charles Rosen.
Did I say that?
Jeez. Mary Mullen.
This heinous thing about the real person, and we go, what? We're getting rid of this guy.
Pete Ferrero.
I'm feeling wonderful. Kathleen looks crush, TV crush worthy.
Like so many special guests and all your questions. Live on the Beverly Hills 90210 Show. Oh, yeah.
And we're gonna dance now.
Okay, here we are, Larry, once again on the Beverly Hills 90210 Show. How are you, man? How's everything going with you?
Other than my dog having some veterinary stuff, and he's kind of still, you know, under, coming off of anesthetic and stuff, fine. I saw one of my heroes last night in San Diego. I mean, it's yesterday afternoon, just members of a very radical theater troupe that in 1969 were probably the most dangerous people in the United States, but they're called the Living Theater. And he's probably the last surviving member of it from that troupe, which was Julian Beck, a very famous character in Judith Malina, who played Grandma actually in the Addams Family's movies in her career when she wasn't in jail for. You know, they basically started a lot of the activism of the 60s and all the riots. And basically, they were the ones who helped end the war and did lots of stuff. So that was fun.
Well, you were in San Diego, though. So
yeah, I drove down there to meet him. I mean, I had met him before, but a documentarian wanted to meet him. So I was trying to facilitate that.
You were in Melanie Country. Did you see Melanie?
No.
It's okay. Just
drive down, have lunch, drive back.
That's it. In and out.
3-hour drive.
Yes. And tomorrow's opening day. So we're all excited about that.
Yeah, we can't lose till tomorrow.
Hey, I want to tell you this. Kathleen Robertson's niece, Roslyn, has a song coming out tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow. And here's the song. So I've told her that we would plug away at it. Here it is.
Be riding on some good vibes.
What do you think, Larry?
I can't follow that. I'm all for it. You know, anything in a bikini is good for me. And it had a beat. It kind of reminds me. Yeah, I would give it a high 8.
Listen, let me tell you, I think this song is great. I mean, the nice weather is coming, and she is singing about that, right? Good vibes is coming.
I'm all for vibes. Good luck, and whatever. I think it'll be coming out. You'll be able to get it on your Apple, Spotify,
wherever you get records and YouTube and all that stuff. And it's Roslyn, Roslyn Witter, Witter music. That's where you can follow her. And good. I will put that up in a second.
Probably Canadian, I would suspect.
Definitely. There is definitely
some Canadian content for those.
Canadian action happening there. So that's where you can find her on Instagram. Yes.
That's
okay. So we are covering a very cool episode of Beverly Hills 90210. This is from season 7. It's pretty good all the way through. There are some clunky moments, which we'll get into, but essentially there's a throwback to the 1940s here. Why don't you tell me about the setup of this particular episode, which is called
A little turn of phrase. This also was the last episode of Steve Wasserman. So we should note that. And it was something that was near and dear to his heart because he was mm-hmm. a kind of romantic, a lost romantic at heart. But this is episode number 22 of a season of, we're going to do basically 31, even though it's right. 32 hours. And the pressure is building on Donna to give it up. We've just come out of a situation where David has this flirtation with another musician. I totally forgot this plot. I checked it out.
Oh my God. We got to watch that
Chloe,
episode.
Chloe.
That's so good. Yeah.
I mean, it's starting to count down for Donna. So we developed this episode as a device in a way to give her permission. And at the same time, to use the talents of our kids, the way they would look in the 40s, which was an evocative period because we had never really explored her grandmother on her father's side
right.
and whether there was a grand. So there was a whole free canvas there to kind of build the story. And we built a World War II story, which Donner's grandmother basically has sex and marries this guy within like a week, you know, and it's like a secret. And of course she doesn't get along with Felice either, just like David. So there's a nice connection there. And it's beautifully done because we get a chance to see Brian and Tori dance in the 40s swing style. And we license the song Sing, Sing, Sing,
which that is 20s just a song, right?
It's a classic song. Everyone knows
right,
it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, YouTube will shut it down when we play the clip later.
Yeah. We should definitely show it. So, yeah, that's it. And then so we created that. And there were some other storylines that were running through because also, again, going into this episode, we have a Kelly and a kid story because – we no longer had the character of Mark. We had written him out.
And so now there's a lot to cover there.
We knew we were going to be going toward Brandon and Kelly toward the end of the season. So we didn't want to like bring in a false guy who would be serious.
Right.
So we kind of developed a plot for her, you know, where we'd see her more maternal side.
Did you know at this point that Donna would be giving it up at the end of the season?
Yes.
So... because that will play into one of the scenes that I show a little bit later on. But let's bring on our returning.
I thought it was going to be sooner, though. I think all that jazz, the one in New Orleans, comes in, and I thought we were actually going to do it then, but we didn't. We wanted to save it.
No, you should save it for the season finale. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, unfortunately, that was also your series finale.
Yes. So
you did not have an opportunity to come back.
Like the workers in the pyramid, once it was done, you were sealed in. You were
okay. Let's bring in our buddy Drew Kinney, our returning champion, who had a lot of work to do in this episode. And of course, our friend costume designer Molly Campbell, who also had a lot of work to do on this episode as well. Let's start with you. Hey, Molly, how are you?
Even better. That's been a great half hour so far.
I want to say Kathleen Robertson says hi to you. She told me to say hi. And she had a question. Ask her about spaghetti straps for group photo shoots. Do you know what that means? Is that some sort of inside joke between?
Maybe. We did. I think at the beginning of this season, we did what I call the gap ad. White t-shirts and jeans, but everybody had a different, but there's a whole scene.
Yeah, that was a denim. That was a denim time.
Dressing Tori with a spaghetti strap. Spaghetti strap goes down off the left shoulder.
Okay.
Love spaghetti straps.
But she's
very visual.
A white satin, you know.
Yes.
Bridal night idea. And,
okay, so and I want let's getting to this episode though. Thank you. That's a Kathleen question. she's sending me another one for you too, Molly. So this was the 40s.
Yeah.
So what did you where do you start with this when these guys tell you, hey, we're gonna go to the 40s?
Well, there are several appearances of Tori in the 40s. And the thing that really sells this, I think, is the wig and the shoes. But let me go get the dress.
Has the dress.
Oh, yeah.
Of course Molly has the dress.
Of course she does. Well, I would expect you to have the set somewhere in the...
Yeah, I mean, so what sets do we do? We have the ballroom set, and then we have a couple of like a bedroom kind of sets, right? I'm just trying to remember.
I mean, honestly, I was thinking about it. You know, I watched the episode the other day, and it occurred to me that, you know, it's like we really got to create some really awesome stuff. Because you're right. I mean, like, you know, we're in the 1990s and we had to do something 50 something years beforehand. And, you know, so like, what's our reference, right? I wasn't alive.
So right.
The yeah. Warner Research Collection, which is, you know, a place you just call them on the phone and you'd say, hey, I need research on, you know, soldiers going to war.
Oh, there
know,
we have
US
it.
Air dances, malls, dames, you know, all that kind of other lingo and verbiage you would have used. And they just pull out a stack of research that you can go look through. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now it's all good.
I remember that too, those days.
This is amazing. Look what Molly's pointing here. This is the dress. Sketches. This is literally the dress. Tori
looks fabulous. Tori looks fabulous in this episode, and so does Brian. I mean, they sell themselves as Donna's grandmother and her grandfather.
All right. Oh, and here's the dress. Oh my God, look at this. Is this crazy?
Can you step back a bit so we can see it a little bit? There you go.
Yeah, there you have it. There you have
it. Nope, not the other way.
There you have it. Wow, this is the dress. This is the dress that Tori wore in this episode. This is great.
Molly, did you buy that off? Where'd you get the dress? Where did you get it?
We made it. Elizabeth Savoy, our cutter fitter, she made this from the drawing.
Oh, wow.
And it's really sweet. If you could see it up close, the buttons.
Brocade buttons. And
buttons are shapes of little hearts.
Oh, gosh. We see it. Yeah.
That's spectacular. Awesome.
The one thing I can't find is the belt.
Tori probably ran off with it.
Yeah. Well, they did come up to the back door.
She probably wore the belt to whatever party she was going to that night.
And then we would, for Brian's uniform, we just would rent the uniform, probably.
Oh, that's a good question, Larry.
Yeah, I was thinking for Brian's uniform, we just would rent the uniform. I assume there's like a rental from a costume.
We went to one of the military houses, and they did everything. Yeah, they're good.
All right, I have Kathleen's question for you, Molly. It's not about this episode, unfortunately.
That's
From a budget perspective, which actor character was the most expensive to dress, and who could you put in contemp casuals and they wouldn't care?
This is a rhetorical question.
Brian Austin Green was really easy to dress. So was Luke. Jason, halfway there.
How about Ian?
Oh, Ian was had a lot of input because since he was five and his mother took him from New Jersey to New York to audition for things, she insisted that he wear blue and white. And we have a lot of pictures of Ian. And in fact, the sweater that works at the beginning of this episode is blue.
That's right. He's talking.
Wow, that's kind of spooky.
Okay. I guess the easiest was Kathleen.
I think that's what the answer was.
Right? Molly.
Molly's not going to confirm that.
Oh, we can't hear you, Molly. All of a sudden, we can't hear Molly. Can you hear Molly?
No. No, you pulled your mic out somehow, or you muted yourself somehow.
Somehow you muted yourself, maybe. Okay. All right, Drew. So you're figuring out these sets, right? You've got to bring the 40s to life. Now, there's a few of them. It's not just one thing. I asked Larry about it when we did the watch along. Mm-hmm. Where do you put these on the set?
Well, I mean, I would say the bulk of them were swing sets. So they were either two walls or two walls with a little return. So you do a pan and you could see two interior corners of a room. Like hotel rooms, things like that. One of them could go on the space behind the Peach Pit, which was the big swing set space. We took that stuff in and out all the time. Or that little space behind the Walsh Kitchen where you could do a little tiny two-wall thing like that. But, you know, I was thinking in watching the episode, you know, we never really got any credit for it, but we did an incredible set and it was huge. And, like, we spent so much money. And ultimately, in the end, it was so nice that normally when you're done with the set, you take it apart and you rack it and you reuse it for other things. We thought it was so awesome that we gave it to the city of Los Angeles and they still use it today. They call it Union Station, but you know, it's, we built it for the city. So
that's amazing. I didn't realize that.
Where is it?
The train station. It's Union Station. It was a joke.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay. Yeah, I got really excited. The fans were ready to go down there and check this site. Molly, maybe come leave and come back in. Maybe remove yourself from the thing and just re-enter the chat, the thing. Okay.
There she goes. Well done. I felt that I wanted more from the scenes. I wanted, you know, to see a little bit more. I knew, like, from the dance, I wanted the dance scene to go on longer. I can't remember why. I guess, you know, why it didn't. You have to do things to time. Because Steve would have also edited this also and mixed it. My brother Fred did the music for this. Fred did the music for this. He did a great job. You know, even thinking about it now. I mean, obviously, you know, we licensed Sing, Sing, Sing.
Speaking of Sing, let's watch the scene.
Oh, yeah. Take a look at it here.
I guess you could blame it on the times or the music or the way he looked in his uniform. But I guess it was love at first sight.
That's just terrific.
It's really nice stuff.
No, they Tori really brought it there for the dance. I, you know, she really, you know, she was swaying big time. A very good kiss. It was just, you know, it did what it was supposed to in a way, you know, setting the story up that way.
So this is somewhere on behind the Walsh house somewhere, Drew?
No. That place in particular was not a swing set. I mean, if you look at something like that, one of the ways to look and kind of tell that, it's a real brief scene. There's not a lot to it. And if you look, there's big wide overhead shots where it has like lots of patterned linoleum, right? Much bigger. A swing set, you maybe do 12 by 12. And then if you look back towards the corner behind where they're dancing, there's a set of stairs that go up, turn a corner. There's, you know, thick adobe walls. That was a location. And that was, I don't know, I don't remember exactly where that was, but it was
probably It was
married to something else, so we could do that one little scene while we were shooting something else.
Yeah.
So it could have been, I mean, because that kind of stuff is all over Southern California, it could have been Altadena.
Probably. I would imagine.
I mean, it just depends what the other location was that we needed to, you know, match the hours to get. I mean,
it's possible that it's at the college, or is that not possible?
No.
No, because they didn't have linoleum like that anywhere.
No,
it was all either just painted floors or just
the other store. You know, we have a scene where I think when we go to where Valerie goes to visit Rob at his cottage, I think that might look like a natural set too. So maybe the Altadena thing is right. Those are kind of Altadena sets.
We did a lot of stuff like that where, I mean, for years, where it was just we had to do something and you had no idea where it was, but it was near the house in Altadena because we had to match up the hours to get a full day. Or Dylan's house, because it was around the corner.
That's how it was.
So, Larry, the grandmother, we talked about this before we came on, the grandmother is June Lockhart, who, of course, was in Lassie. I mean, she was
the mother, you know, for decades in the classic Lassie, and so many other things, too. I haven't really looked at her credits, but, you know, Lost she's one of the grand dams of television, and certainly one of the great mothers of television, and it was a real coup to get her. I mean, hopefully we talked with Diane Young about getting that. I can't remember if we discussed it with Diane. We talked about casting season 7, but you know, we had a chance to get her. Diane brought, said, yes, we all wanted her. And she brought, you know, kind of a sauciness to it, you know, because again, she was a woman who really gave it up early. Who, you know, didn't hold on to it because the times were different, you know? So that, anyway, that, like I said, that gave it psychologically, it works in giving Tori permission, because we know now we're leading toward endgame, sexual endgame for her.
Yes.
After years.
Lisa says, hi, everyone. It's Lisa's birthday tomorrow. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Lisa.
Brian says, Fred's music was great in this, Larry. Loved the vibe. So do you want to talk about that?
Talk about it? Well, yeah, you know, he did a good, like I said, Fred's a very good, he hasn't been a composer in a while now, but he was a very good composer when he was, and he's worked with me a lot, you know, in different shows I did. And you know, he's again, when you have a period piece like that, it gives you something special to kind of challenges you in a certain way that brings out creativity. So we always tried to do that like once a season, have one kind of standalone special kind of episode, because we were doing 32 a year, and you know, we have to keep everybody interested, including the writers and the set designers and the costume people.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, so we all, you know, we all kind of look forward to it. Yeah, sure, they're indulgent and stuff, but we enjoyed them. And I think this particular one holds up pretty well. And that story is really holds up really well.
What episode number was this in the season?
22.
Okay. Yeah.
So March, it was a March broadcast. So yes, it just come off of February sweeps.
What you said, I think, is absolutely right, because at that point of the season, you know, so we've been going since the previous end of April or beginning of May.
Right.
And so you're cranking through and you're in the, that's probably a double up is my guess. No.
Yes. But it would have been shot probably end of January.
With Union Station, I'm thinking maybe it wasn't a double up. It might have been just like right on the edge of one of those, because there was a lot of stuff we did there. Yeah. And that was, you know, that's kind of ambitious when you're doing two crews.
I can't believe we did that. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, really, that we put that in.
But episode 22, so you're like two-thirds of the way through the season. So for us, you know, working on the show, you know, so we're just responding to the scripts that you guys produced, right, and figuring out what for us to do next. And so we were only a couple of weeks ahead of what we were doing. And so getting something like a script like this, absolutely energizing, because you're right. At that point, you kind of feel like you're about two thirds of the way through the marathon, and you feel like, oh yeah, I can make it to the end, or man, I'm going to get a cramp and I'm just going to give up. And that little thing right there is like, you know, getting a little protein boost and you fucking make it to the end. So
yeah. I mean, I don't remember. Did you work closely with Scott Paulin in this? Do you remember that?
Wait, that's the other thing. Scott Paulin, who, the fans will know as the Professor
Randall.
The
husband of Lucinda Nicholson.
Was also
Brandon ruins their marriage.
He was also a director on 90210, and he infamously directed the episode "The Dreams of Dylan McKay."
And right, so yeah, he wound up getting it. His number came up on the special episodes.
So he came back for this. You probably wanted him for the storyline.
Well, I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sure we wanted him for the storyline, where I think he's got to hold Steve up for his graduation. And I'm sure the deal was, you have to let me direct an episode. And it just became this one.
Because so maybe probably that's
no one thought much of the episode at the time, because again, it was one of the, you know, out of the box episodes. It's kind of treading water a bit, because we had already let you know, the Kelly's romantic storyline had to be dropped, and we were kind of in the way. We weren't quite sure how we got to finish the season. And now at this episode, we declared.
Maybe we should tell Scott Paulin he can come on the podcast and we'll let him direct an episode of the podcast.
Exactly. That would work.
Yeah, you know, Larry, to answer your question, I can't answer about him specifically, because I did so many episodes. I mean, you know, I was there for a decade, so you know, I did 208 episodes.
But I'm saying you remember James Whitmore, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm saying some of the guys who really were the A team, you know, Dan Adias.
They did multiple things. Chip Chalmers, Michael Lang.
Drew, this is a specific in the fact that you're in the 40s. So did he have, maybe I think more specifically, if you remember the director having specific notes about the way the 40s looked and all this?
And that's what I'm saying. No, it's like, honestly, just in my recollection, I don't remember that, but just thinking about kind of the how things would work like that, my guess is Paul Wagner would have had more of an influence on that than he would have.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. And also, like I said, I think Steve was shepherding this episode. He would have been in charge of it, you know.
Yeah.
And right. So he had his taste in there too. Mm-hmm.
Let's look at a couple more scenes and how you guys set some of this up.
I'm having a baby.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because I knew you would have to leave. And I thought it would hurt you. Please don't be angry.
No. Could I be? It's the most wonderful news I've ever heard.
This is Union Station.
Yeah.
You know, and we have the whole running thing with the necklace and stuff. I mean, we really, really milked it all out here. It was so good. I mean, you know, in retrospect, looking at it now, you know, it really works. At the time, people are going, what the hell are they doing?
Well, I think fans of 90210, you either loved these trips through time because they did the 60s too, right?
60s, yeah. The West, yeah,
you
know what I mean?
Or you, right, the West, Unreal whatever, World, or you hate it.
One, or, you know.
You know, I mean, or like when the Wild Horses woman that, you know, me and Chuck looked at a few weeks ago where Dylan went off riding horses and all this stuff. Like, these are things that are, you know, either like that or that seeing the actors do fun things, or it's just not your speed.
Oh, the flashback things were always great for us.
Exactly. What about the pictures, Drew, of the
one like, being so kind? Your parents and my parents are all taking care of us. Your son is beautiful and happy. Together, we wait for your return. All of our love flies with you.
Not what I was going to show.
That was my brother's music, though. I just was, you know, listening again. Because when I first saw the thing, I didn't realize it was my brother's stuff.
But here's the pictures of them as the younger, you know, I mean, look, they look identical to Brian and Tori to the point where June Lockhart, the grandmother, should have been like, what the fuck is going on? I mean, this.
Yeah, no, she was so dear. And we wish her well. She's still around, June Lockhart. We'll send her love.
Some time travel movie, you know, where they were back there. I mean, look, they look just like them. So.
No, it was a well-told story, very simply, you know. And like I said, I love the cross that kind of gets passed down, and that's the cross down the house today. And, you know, it was kind of a good – we shot high, and I think we scored.
Well, let's talk about this aspect of it. We alluded to it in the beginning of it, but we kind of see Donna have sex without seeing Donna have sex.
Exactly.
I remember the first time we made love. And that night I sat up all night and watched you sleep. I knew then that despite the fact that everyone thought we were crazy, we knew we weren't. Please, Celia, if something should happen to me, I want you to go on with your life. Find a husband and a father for our son.
Woo! Yeah, we were delighted to do that. You know, I'm thinking about now how we felt, oh, wow, this is so cool. We're going to get to do this without really doing it.
Yes, it's not Donna, it's Celia. It's,
I know. It's such a cool thing. Should have done it last season.
Brian, we're going to hit you up soon for something. The flashback episodes are very divisive amongst the fan base. I really like the one from season 4, The Time Has Come Today.
Oh, yeah. That's
that was fun.
Fun. You know, this one, I guess, because the period isn't that popular, perhaps, with our fan base, the 40s. It's really well done. I mean, I'm just looking at it like that.
Brian, more Fred's music, the saxophone and scenes like this make it really exotic, and then with the nylon guitar too. So
nice. Brian knows he's a composer. Like I said, I missed it the first time. I didn't realize it was
Chuck's not here for this. Love the trip to time, but not the horse lady episode.
I think this is an episode that's not able to be streamed on Paramount Plus.
What would be the problem here?
I don't know. That would be, there's another one when they're leaving the train station. One of the classic songs there.
Is Things to Do on a Rainy Day available to stream nowadays? With Color Me Bad, that it wasn't for a long time because of the licensing of the music.
I think that one is, isn't it? Or no, I don't know.
We're trying
to free the episodes because it's just
Friendly with, was it Ken Miller?
No, Drew would
never. Are you friendly with him?
He would never pass.
Oh, you are friendly with him.
Okay. I mean, back in the day.
No, okay.
A lot of people in many years.
Okay, so that's the Donna and David stuff. Really nice stuff. I mean, I think everybody that's... Well, the whole thing, too, you have to mention about this is there's issues with Felice, right? As per usual, Felice has caused problems in that relationship, and she did for them, and now she's a problem.
Well, yeah, because, you know, it looks like they're going to get serious again. She's going to try to stop it. So, I mean, that's kind of the fun of it. And we build in a bond between, you know, Donna's grandmother from her father's side and David. You know, they both don't like Felice. So that even makes it kind of better, you know. But, I mean, the thing here that's cool is that we basically took a blank canvas. We had never really explored Donna's grandparents.
Yeah.
We kind of told the whole story. So that you know,
I do like that June Lockhart has a scene where she asks, because Donna and David are going to stay at a hotel nearby, and Donna has to immediately correct her and say, no, oh my God, no, like, it's not like that. You know what I mean? And she's, June Lockhart's, yeah.
She's disappointed.
A little bit disappointed. I don't know where Molly is. I miss Molly. I wanted to hear what she had to say about the negligee
is nice too. Yeah. I mean, the other stories are really interesting too, because this is the introduction of Rob Andrews, the young actor that's in the Valerie plot. Is that correct? This is the first time we see him.
Our friend Simon Moon says, the guy who played Little Joey was in A Nice Band years later. Have also recognized him in a horror movie. You know what? We tried to get him, and he is still in that band, I think, Simon, because he said he's very busy with the band. So I don't know if it's that band or a different band, but he's still really involved. Do you want to talk about that next, the kid that shows up at the house?
Yeah, well, you know, again, this is like a two-episode storyline that, you know, again, we're treading water here, trying to fill in some space before we're going to really rev up the romance between Brandon and, you know, break up him and Tracy and have him kind of move toward Kelly again. You know, we're going to bring in the Mariah from Texas. You know, we're going to do a bunch of stuff to kind of point them together, make it right. And this one, you know, again, we didn't want to bring in a romantic interest because it was there's no time to do that. It wouldn't have been.
Last romantic interest,
right? So the actress, she needs some time.
I think, you know, they're free to talk on their podcast. She had this person removed from the show. So I mean, you know, Mark Reese. So I mean, it's like, what else are we going to do now with her?
Again, you know, in any series, as you start winding down the year and contracts are coming up again, that's when the actors have the most leverage.
Right.
So it's just a fact of the business. And, you know, when you have the leverage, you want to use the leverage because you don't always have it. So anyway, so we came up with this storyline, which is kind of, you know, more like the AIDS storyline, just giving her kind of a human, you know, heart story. She's got to be the psychologist or whatever. And, you know, we came up with this kind of kid thing. And I have no idea why we did that one with the kid, because, you know, I'm not particularly fond of children on camera. But I think it worked. I think it works okay. We spread it over two episodes, so it's kind of really a stall.
I mean, look,
it's all right. The kid's all right.
I don't know that Kelly with this kid, like, it just doesn't, like, she's just not. She's not in it.
Look, the first thing you should probably do is get, so never when the kid says, don't call the cops or whatever, you probably should be calling.
That's the first thing that she should do, you know, and she's not really sympathetic towards the kid very much. I mean, anyway, this is what she winds up doing.
They're surgic. They're from County Social Services.
I join.
They're going to help you find your parents. What? I didn't know what else to do, Joey.
You liar. You're a liar!
Joey.
You're not my friend.
Yes, I am.
I could have stayed here. I would have been good.
You'll see, this is for the best.
No, it's not. I hate you. I hate you!
Joey, I'm gonna take care of you. It's gonna be all right, okay? Come on, let's go. Come on.
See, then we burn the social services because he runs away. The guy does not do a good job. We have bad civil servants there. You know, they just don't do their job.
Say,
he gets away because we need him for the next episode.
The poor social service worker, didn't you name after a friend, I think you said?
I can't remember his name. Yeah, now that I think about it. Yeah, no, it was a friend.
Total
of mine.
Fuck up.
Sergek. Steve Sergek is the director.
Okay, well, we're talking about... while we're talking about, you know, one actress having someone removed from the show, then there's the other storyline with Valerie and the actor, Tiffany and Jason Lewis. Jason Lewis's character's name is Rob. And we'll watch the kiss. But then you got a phone call that it wasn't going well. And we'll talk about that.
Mama.
nice big pull.
I was gonna say it would be a drone shot now. I'd be like, I'm so sick of seeing drone shots. And,
oh my god, everything's only, a drone
it's
shot.
It's become the candles in the bathroom shot for directors.
Well, there was Scott Paulin definitely had candles in that Donna scene. So they were highly influenced by that.
Probably. Well, everyone. No, they've all they've seen it over and over.
All right, now set the stage for me, Larry.
This is the beginning of the character. I think this is the first time we see him.
He was at the Peach Pit and he was trying to get in because Quentin Tarantino was there with his group.
And he has to get to the Peach Pit after dark. He does not get by the bouncer.
Right.
Yes. This actor was a jeans model. Jason Lewis was a dear kid who was a jeans model. We fell in love with. He was so good looking, and we were writing a part right for him, exactly who he was, and we thought we really had a winner. And so I think he must have shot like 3 or 4 episodes though, right? I mean, there's a couple after this,
but it doesn't last long.
We had signed him for probably to the end of the season. This is probably like 8 out of 10 or something like that. And long story short, again, it was a kissing problem.
Set the stage for me. There. We've heard from Chuck where he's gotten these phone calls out of the blue, but you aren't somebody that really has to be on the front lines with the call. You might get called into Aaron Spelling's office. You might hear it from Jessica that, oh, this shit's going down. But now you got a direct line phone call. Isn't that what
happened? Yes. I was on an exercise cycle. I remember it's like 6:30 in the morning. And I got a call from the set, which, cannot be good if you're getting a call. And so she must have been in makeup or whatever. That was always a dangerous place when actors go to makeup because they get charged up over something. They get charged up,
Makeup people
want to be their friends, so they basically validate everything.
They charge them up.
You don't think he's good. No, he's not good. To their credit, they're trying to keep a job and a relationship. So, that's never good.
So she got her all worked up, the makeup artist.
And so basically she says, no, this is not going to work out with this guy. We have to get rid of him.
This is
Tiffany on the phone with me. And that's what I did. We got rid of him.
Did you apologize? Chuck probably would have went head to head, but
I did not. Because at that point, my contract hadn't been picked up, and it wasn't going to be picked up.
Right. Well, you didn't know that then, though, at that moment. Yeah.
Well, I was feeling something's going on, I'm sure. So, I wanted to accommodate anybody. I liked the kid. He wasn't. He's not Brando or, he's not the greatest actor in the world, but it just was what it was. And I thought we thought it was working fine. I thought the storyline was we had a place where the storyline was going and we were happy with that. And the way it was starting off, it seemed kind of good to give her some Valerie, a good romantic storyline. And it just didn't work for her for whatever reason. And, I call it the kissing problem. And ultimately that's it. You don't really want to be intimate with this person,
Right.
Whether it's offset, onset, the smell of the person, the look of the person.
Whatever
it is. Maybe, again, people get really sensitive. They think the other person's not a good actor. And now I'm in scenes with a bad actor and I'm in the C plots. And, actors, look, and Drew's seen this, I'm sure. Actors, when you're getting really, it's a lot of pressure. They'll count lines. Why have 52 lines and so-and-so gets 104?
Drew, I don't want to put you in the hot seat with any of this, but... Were you in an office where the shitstorm would be talked about? Like, did you hear what happened with so and so, or are you like just building a set and you're totally out of it?
Well, it would depend, because where my office was, especially if it was like a quiet day, there was a writer's office right across the wall from where I was, so you could hear stuff go on in the phone. You could hear like. We'd be playing music or something. The CD went in and I had to change it. And you just hear like, bang, and hear the phone get slammed.
Yeah, this is a visiting writer's office. So it's not really
you hear the door close and then you hear stomp, stomp, stomp. And you look over your shoulder and see somebody walk past the window and out the door. And then they're going to Paul's office.
Right. But you're not aware of this Tiffany.
No, I mean, there were times like when we were in the, say we'd be sitting in Paul's office talking about something and somebody would have a problem, Jason or somebody. And there was nothing, sort of nonchalant about that. It would be the door would kick open and it'd be like, ah, in the middle of a meeting and, you know, yeah, got to deal with that issue right now. And we'd be sitting there and go, okay, we'll sit here for a minute. Let this
and that's where
as long as it didn't affect I don't have to remove a painting. I don't have to change anything. As long as it didn't affect you, it didn't really.
At that point, we wouldn't know because it would be like, well, we don't even know what the hell's going on. No, right. There's some disagreement. And then whoever was sitting there, who was the target of the agreement, would have to get up and leave with them and go do something and then come back and close the door and go, where were we? You know, and then it would be back into, oh, yeah, like go back to those dailies again. Well, here's the problem, you know, whatever.
Right. I was going to say, you know, the problem that season for me was that Paul wasn't there a lot of times. He was really ill that year.
Yeah.
And so that was, otherwise, Paul would have called me. We're thinking about it now. Tiffany would have gone to Paul. And Paul would have called me.
So you were out of the loop. And at that point,
see, my point of view, and especially in television manufacturing, was I can always change the story. I'm not going to, unless it's something really near and dear to me. What's the difference? I'm just going to make another story. You know,
that's fine. Well, but I mean, it is unusual that she would call the writer. Well, you were
like I said, because Paul wasn't there, he was not available to her. Because Paul was the buffer for the actors. I mean,
so she must have been on
a great comfort to us as writer producers on the other side of the hill that Paul was there.
Get me who's in charge. It was almost a Karen moment. I'm just kidding. Get me who's in charge here, right?
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Yeah. And again, it all came out of this feeling of leverage that they all knew they had because they hadn't re upped their deals and Fox really wanted them.
Renee says, I like this story. We love Renee here. She's always tried to help us along the way. I like this storyline for Val. Finally, she was not in a bad way relationship.
No, that's crazy. And then the guy goes back. I mean, again,
Renee also says there is a segment from Access Hollywood with the two of them talking about 90210, and it looked like she was having fun. Must have changed her mind. LOL.
You know, I suspect when he ended up in Sex and the City with the same character playing exactly the same way, she might have seen it differently.
Brian Navarro hints, I do feel like perhaps one of Tiffany's co-stars gave her ideas, hint, hint.
Ooh.
I mean, I don't even, there's no validity sure to that statement was, whatsoever. Yeah.
Because again, you know, I tried to stay out of the actor's part of it, but I don't really
know.
You
were thrown into the fire
here. I would just
here.
Speculate. Yeah. Well, like I said, I just acquiesced because I'll just make another story. That's, you know, I didn't like it, but just the way it was, you know.
Now, the worst of this episode, unfortunately, is the stuff we didn't like when we watched with Steve and Claire, and the good that came out of it was Jason.
Again,
and
I think we just ran.
Let's watch
it again.
This is a bunch of stuff. I don't know what the mixture is, but we'll get into all this.
Cut. Ran the red lights tomorrow. Cut.
It's a joke.
Cut.
What?
Anyway.
I'm all for that. I mean, that was their first kiss, I believe, too. Yeah, this had a lot of kissing in it, which helped. But then we do have this, what we call the comedy runner, which, Iron never liked being in those. But and maybe that's why he was punishing us, but kind of playing so broadly in this. but it's just, you know, it's a time filler. And there's nothing else to be said for it. I mean, it doesn't really enhance their relationship, I don't think, does it? I mean.
No, I mean, the thing is, so what's happening, and I don't have the clip for whatever reason.
It introduced CUTV.
So it says CUTV, and Steve is...
Well, Steve has to use the studio, so it gives us a chance to be after hours at the studio, which gives Brandon and Tracy a chance to kiss.
But so Claire is helping him on set and...
He has a marketing project, I think.
He turns the cleaner into a glue.
Yeah. It's like, I'm sorry. He tries to sell it. He's just,
this was the episode Kathleen decided to leave. No, I'm just kidding. But no, I mean, it's just, and Steve does not, like you said, Ian doesn't really play, like, it's so over the top, sort of, right? This particular moment.
We all have our ups and downs, you know.
He's Ryan's, lovely, of course. He's lovely.
Ryan struck out on this one. You know, I'm sure it was like a last minute thing we just put in because we didn't really have something enough or something. Just because it's a standalone little thing. I mean, nothing of value. There's no stakes in this story.
Simon says, I think the funny Steve's plot line really work. It's goofy but very likable and charming at the same time. Love it. Okay, so what the fuck do we know?
Forget what I said.
what he said is right.
Yeah, you know, I should say that English is not his first language, though. Correct.
That's fair.
But yeah, we love Simon. I know. Yeah. I think he's Austrian, right?
Yes, I think he is. Yeah. So those are all the things that happened. In terms of the Brandon and Tracy stuff, this is good. This is pretty solid kissing, pretty solid romance, good story building there. What did you think of that, Larry?
I think it's, well, again, I must have, it can't be the first kiss between them because we're in episode 22. So
no,
I,
there's I definitely been
so. A. And we're going to start phasing them down by, by heaven sent. She's going to find the ring. She's going to find the engagement ring and think it's for her. We got to really, again, she's going to serve the story. We knew we weren't going to go the distance with her, but, you know, we thought she was playful and fun and she was like a good anchor.
Yeah,
you know, just more like a talking head in a certain way, but charming. And you know, she genuinely, as we know, really wanted to be with Jason. You know, I mean, just on the set and stuff, and she enjoyed all that stuff. And it's good.
Drew, do you have any memories of Jill Novick?
No, not terribly, because you know most of that kind of stuff. I was already gone and off to the next thing, working on the next episode by the time. They would be coming in and doing something besides like making sure that all of the CUTV stuff was set up for that swing set.
Oh, what about the glue?
Wow, that's right. Yeah. That's a good set. It was a good set. I mean, that's pretty cool.
The glue bit, like, is that something that you have to figure out? Or
that would have been Gary Antista.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Props. Figuring out what that, you know, who knows what it was. It could have been Stick'Em or something.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of little sets are fun because you have to, you can't do very much, but people have to be able to see it and buy that it is what it is. And it's just a little vignette of something. Sometimes those are the most difficult ones because you can't really show very much, can't build very much.
Mm.
And you got actors standing in front of it. So, I mean, it's all about them talking. I mean, number one, frankly, if somebody looks at that scene and notices that it's a set of a TV studio, then I didn't do my job.
Right.
Honestly, if they don't notice what I do, then I think it's successful.
Exactly.
So if nobody ever knows what I'm doing, I'm good.
I want to compliment you on the wallpaper of that set. You know, when she was reading Back to the
Oh my God, yes. Thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really, you know, yeah, it's just that was
the greatest
really great
wallpaper
there.
Place in the world. Aztec wall coverings in the Valley. They're awesome.
Perfect.
They're still there. They still support the business for everybody. They actually nowadays they print their own wallpaper. But back in the day, if you wanted period wallpaper, you had to go to Aztec. That was the only place you could go. And so now you can design something that's period and they'll print it for you in just yard after yard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Digital printing.
Aaron Kirsch, I think is his last name. Great, great business. Really great.
From the set perspective, are you excited when you get something like this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about it. You know, most of the time it's, let's think about it in terms of episodic TV, frankly, most of the time it's, let's cover a sign in a restaurant. Let's
right
a location and put in a wall to block off a bigger dining room to make it smaller. Mm. Let's do some stuff outside of a building to change the way the front of it looks, like Peach Pit, like putting the tile pieces and all the stuff on the outside of that diner in Pasadena. I mean, honestly, most of the time that was kind of the way we had to think about things because we're always marrying it with other locations and moves. Mm. So a lot of that stuff wasn't on stage because we just couldn't do it that way. And we had to do a location with a couple of different pieces and it was always married with something else. So that was always fun because you have to go out to locations and figure out, you know, places where they are. I was just talking to somebody about this today. One of the things that, like, when you do something like that, that's the same kind of thing and you do it over and over and over again, it becomes kind of muscle memory for things. So like, one of the things that I can still do today that the painters used to give me crap for is I'd get vinyl letters for a door made in an office and they'd go, well, just stick it up roughly where you want it. And then they would center it and level it and do all that stuff and put it on the window. And I'd walk in and go there. And they'd come with a tape measure and go, damn, it's centered. And oh crap, it's level. Oh, how do you do that? Like one of those things that like we did it so many times. I can still do it today and I haven't done it in years.
Mm.
So like that's the kind of thing. So anytime there was something different, like, oh, let's do a swing set with a 1940s refrigerator. Well, now there's a wall with a different shape of a thing in front of it. yeah, it's always more interesting because it's something you never planned to do. So like we get a new episode script, that was the first thing we'd look for, is there something really interesting in this one? So getting one of these episodes, like we mentioned, the was the 60s episode, Time Has Come Today, was that
yeah.
one? Like I still remember getting that and trying to, you know, imagining building an 8-foot tall Ankh covered with, you know, psychedelic graffiti. you know, those kind of things. I mean, as a matter of fact, up here over my shoulder on the wall is still the other side of me is my J. Drew Kinney pharmacy from the Wild West town, you know. So
that's awesome.
Those kind of things are always fun because it was, we get to do something different. It was exciting.
Yeah.
Hey, Pete, you know, I just want to hold on to that Valerie Robb story, because it was a pretty good story about a young actor coming to town and Valerie kind of being who she is, because she when he tries to get into the Peach Bay After Dark, you know, he gets bounced because he's on the list to meet Quentin Tarantino.
Right.
And what we said up there is how successful the After Dark is, because Quentin Tarantino was there, though he wasn't a giant star then. It was like 1997, I think. But and then basically she's going to become his manager. We kind of had this whole
yes.
kind of storyline planning, but we're going to have a, you know, we're also going to do, again, Beverly Hills kind of things. Again, ordinary kids living extraordinary lives. Now we got a movie premiere. We've got some parties. And when we have parties, again, for the writers, we can get all the characters in the same scene, which was always important to us every show, at least to try to integrate them together. So you're always looking for stuff like that. And so we had high hopes for that. And I think we shoot it at a looping stage there, you know, as an
ADR. Oh, that's ADR right. Stage. There's all the ADR stuff. ADR stage. Yeah.
And again, we have a little bit of fun with that, you know, show the process a bit. So yeah, I think the storyline set off correctly. I mean, and you had to just accept his work for what it is. And, you know, that's just didn't happen for her.
I think he's great in it, for the record. I think Jason Lewis is fun in this episode. He's playing this Hollywood character that came into town. He's not like everybody else.
Yeah,
I thought he was fine. I didn't think it was. I mean, I have no idea what he was like off camera.
I'm sure he was charming. You
know. And yeah, he seemed like a nice enough guy. What do I know?
He had a good run on Sex and the City.
I'm sorry that we lost Molly. I wish there was so much good costume stuff that I wish that she could have commented on.
At least we saw the dress yeah. and you appreciate the work that
I want to mention After Dark, because of that scene where he gets turned away, you see the door for After Dark
right.
underneath the awning and the letters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've ever talked about this. Do you know what the icon on the door is?
No, what's that?
It's a flying toaster. So these guys had named the club the After Dark, Peach Pit After Dark. There was a software, a screensaver at the time called After Dark that was flying.
That's right. Really early screensaver.
So the flying toaster is what's on the door of the Peach Pit After Dark from the software After Dark. The screensaver.
Hilarious.
Oh, that's amazing.
We all had that. That.
There's a Trivial Pursuit answer for you.
That's awesome. Sherry Weiss just wrote that down for her. She probably knew. All right, let's see. I was going to say this outfit here, I wanted to point out on Jenny. People are saying the reason why that she was in overalls is because she was pregnant at the time. Does that sound like something that you would know, Larry?
I don't recall that. That seems like I would remember it.
So that's a Molly question.
No, I don't think so. I just think, you know, again, she was just coming off a bad relationship, just kind of hanging around the house, and it just gave her a kind of a casual look. I think, unless Molly has another story, I don't remember.
Oh, I don't know.
Hiding anything.
Certainly
didn't have a baby, so.
But Claire's face is just great. The attitude.
Claire's good. You know, that's a cute little scene between them. She catches Kelly with the little kid there, her little man.
I love Claire as a redhead. I just want to point that out. It's my responsibility to say stuff like that. So, okay. Teen Drama Horse says, ha, next trivia night is April 14th. So there you have
it. Hey, Sherry.
We should tell
Sherry we're going to be in Charleston in September. She's kind of far. She's like a good drive away. I think she's further than you, Drew. Wilmington, she's further than...
Yes, we are coming. We have not announced this yet, but we are going to be somehow a part of the Fab Five event in September. That is the plan.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Jenny was pregnant.
There you go. Yeah, so she did have a child then. You know who there you go. Now, thank you, Dr. Weiss of Teen Dramology.
Brian says Claire is always giving good face.
That's
okay. Yes. this has been great, guys. Is there any other thing that we did not cover here? No, I think
we
even alluded to this Fab Five event that we might be at too. So we really covered everything. Yes.
And that should be fun because we're not usually in that part of the world. And there's a lot of friends there, like Drew, like Sherry, Sydney Penny. I should maybe try to get her down there.
Teen Drama says she will not be going, sadly. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think Chuck knows that. He drew the line at Yom Kippur, I think. that's what he said. He had a bad experience once when he did something there.
So I think I remember hearing that.
Yeah. Oh, it's true. But all right, we all clear the date.
This is great, guys. Yeah. Thank you for being here. So sorry, Molly. I have no idea what happened, but we just lost your audio and was hoping that you'd come back in.
Love you, Molly Campbell.
Yeah, we'd love you so much here. Just adore you and would love for you to come back and maybe we could do something fun down the line to pick up some of these questions and some of the other things that from season 7, maybe Larry, we can catch up with.
I'm enjoying season 7, you know. It's really
And where's the storyline with the musician? Is that in the same season?
Yeah, we just got through it. I mean, I think we finish up with that Chloe, which of course my brother and I wrote the song for that too, which is kind of a good little song. They work on something together. And I think I can't remember how the relationship ends. We just have to watch the episodes. I just don't remember it. But I know they came close to like getting it on. And Donna, it increases the pressure for Donna. She knows what's going on between them. She senses it, I think.
Yes.
Or she.
Okay, well, so we should watch that.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, maybe bring that actress on. I think I had a contact
with Natalia,
yeah.
She's really hot.
All right, guys. Thank you all for watching. We will be back next week. With something else. Yeah.
Good.
All right.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you, Drew.
Bye.
Right.
Thank you, guys.